Fourth matter this morning is the trustee's sale, property of Burns.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is John DeWars, and I am counsel for the Boeing Employees Credit Union. For opening argument, I would like to request 8 minutes, Your Honors, and I would like to request 2 minutes of rebuttal.
Proceed.
Your Honor, Burns borrowed approximately $85,000 from the Boeing Employees Credit Union and granted as security for that obligation the second position deed of trust beneficial interest in a deed in trust to the deed of trust to their residence. The Burns defaulted on that obligation, and the Boeing Employees Credit Union elected to sue for a judgment for breach of contract. Admittedly, before BECU did that, they instituted a non-judicial foreclosure, but then completely dismissed that non-judicial foreclosure. Subsequently, the first position lien holder, Wells Fargo, initiated a deed of trust foreclosure, and from that sale, there was approximately $92,000 of surplus. As the second position deed of trust beneficiary, the Boeing Employees Credit Union petitioned for that surplus to be disbursed in satisfaction of the Burns debt to BECU. The Burns cross-petitioned, and the trial court granted disbursement to the Burns on two bases. One, that when Boeing Employees Credit Union obtained a judgment for breach of contract for that debt, their deed of trust interest, their beneficial interest in that second position deed of trust, merged into their judgment for breach of contract. Secondly, that now, as a mere judgment lien holder, the BECU's entitlement to repayment was subordinated to the Burns exemption. So on this appeal, there are essentially two issues. First, Revised Code of Washington 61.24.100 expressly provides that a party like BECU, who has a lien interest that's a consensual lien on real property, who obtains a judgment for breach of contract, nonetheless remains a consensual lien holder with respect to that property even after they have become a judgment creditor. BECU followed the express instructions of 61.24.100 and commenced judicial suit. After that case was completed, sought to have their consensual lien interest satisfied from the surplus of the proceeds of the Wells Fargo sale. The issue then is, should the trial court have ruled that the debt to BECU remained secured by a second position consensual lien interest? The second issue on appeal, Your Honors, is that Washington Revised Code 6.13.080 expressly provides that a homestead exemption with respect to real property is subordinate to an obligation secured by a consensual lien on real property. Properly construing 61.24.100, BECU remained a consensual lienor on the Burns real property following the time that it obtained a judgment for breach of contract. The issue on appeal then is, should the trial court have ruled that in fact BECU's lien interest was superior to the Burns' purported homestead interest? There are no disputes as to the facts at the trial court level. The facts I just gave to you are the same facts that the Burns counsel will give to you. This question before the court is purely one of statutory construction. Questions such as that are reviewed de novo.
Let's go back a little bit before the enactment of the Deed of Trust Act. In 1901, the state Supreme Court decided the Hanna case, in which it said that the entry of judgment on a note did not extinguish the mortgage securing that note. Why should there be any different result here in terms of the right to proceeds, where we have a deed of trust, which is a type of mortgage, entry of judgment on that note? Why should the deed of trust be extinguished?
Why should it not be distinguished?
Why should it be extinguished?
Your Honor, we take no position that the deed of trust should be extinguished upon obtaining a note. In fact, the plain language of 61.24.100 provides that a deed of trust beneficiary may, after the completion of a civil action for judgment on such a note, commence the pursuit of the remedies of a deed of trust beneficiary.
So that is really a codification of what I just said, that in fact the deed of trust doesn't disappear just because one gets a judgment on the note. It still remains a lien, right?
That's exactly right, Your Honor. So I don't know that the same principles apply as in the Hanna case.
Why wouldn't it?
Well, what I mean to say is the rights defined here by BECU are through, just as Your Honor said, the codification of, I guess, the principles set forth in the Hanna case.
So the result should be the same, should it not?
Yes, Your Honor.
There's a judgment on the note. The deed of trust is not extinguished. The lien of the deed of trust attaches to the surplus proceeds of sale, does it not?
Yes, Your Honor. The surplus rights are established by 61.24.080, and the non-extinguishment of the deed of trust is established by the plain language of 61.24.100, and of course the plain language controls.
Now, the trial court used the term merger, and I'm not exactly sure why that's relevant here, but the rule that I just said, basically, that the deed of trust is not extinguished, should drive the result here, should it not?
I think it does, Your Honor. I think that's clear. What I believe Your Honor is picking up on is some confusion that may have existed at the trial court level. I believe that confusion resulted by this, from the citation of out-of-jurisdiction cases by the Burns Council at the trial court level, specifically to decisions from California and Arizona. California and Arizona have statutory schemes totally different from Washington's statute of 61.24.100. They have the one action rule and the security first rules, which says that if you file a civil suit for breach of contract, you must include your foreclosure requests in that civil suit for breach of contract. You can't wait and pursue foreclosure after you have received a judgment. Washington is not a one-action rule. The way that I was taught to remember it when I first started practicing is that we're a one-action-at-a-time rule. Both kinds of remedies may be pursued, that is, judicial and non-judicial. They simply can't occur at the same time, which is, of course, why RCW 61.24.030 makes, as a prerequisite to a non-judicial trustee sale, the fact that there be no pending judicial action. I believe that Your Honor is exactly correct. Are there any other questions before I continue? Yes, Your Honor. So that out-of-state jurisdiction is, I believe, what led to the confusion here. The Burns Council do not cite any cases substantiating the position that there is a merger of a deed of trust in Washington and a judgment for breach of a contract or a promissory note creating an obligation that is secured by that deed of trust. And to suggest that merger occurs would read 61.24.100 completely meaningless. This issue is entirely disposed of by the Upton case, in which the Court of Appeals ruled that a deed of trust beneficiary indeed takes priority over a homestead exemption with respect to surplus of proceeds from a foreclosed property. Sweet, I will address on rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Jan Gossing. I'm here to argue for the respondents.
Proceed.
Thank you. Your Honor, really the question before us here is whether a deed of trust holder may sue, obtain a civil judgment prior to foreclosure, avail themselves of the remedies of a civil judgment creditor, and then also avail themselves of the remedies of deed of trust holder. And we believe they cannot.
Hanna case says differently.
Well, Your Honor, we have a number of other cases that say...
Well, deal with Hanna because that hasn't been overruled, and that's existed since 1901. And that case says to me that you may sue, obtain a judgment on a note, mm-hmm. and the real property security interest is not extinguished. if you apply that principle to this case, it seems the deed of trust here was not extinguished.
Well, there are some distinctions, Your Honor, I think that may apply. For once, our Deed of Trust Act 6124 was certainly enacted after 1901. And I think the Deed of Trust Act, when it was enacted under 6124, there were certain concessions that had to be made in order for banks and creditors to foreclose in a more expeditious and cheaper manner. One of them was you don't get a deficiency when you foreclose, for example.
Right, but that's not material to the issue here. The issue is whether or not the lien of the deed of trust is extinguished
right.
by obtaining a judgment on the note.
Right.
The Hanna case says no, and the statute here, the deed of trust statute, seems to codify that portion by saying you may proceed with an action on the note and later foreclose the deed of trust. So tell me why that principle means that you win.
Okay. First of all, Your Honor, 6124-100 recently was addressed by the Beal Bank case by the Supreme Court, which clearly stated that the rights of non-foreclosing lien holders, such as BCU, are simply not implicated by 6124-100. So 100 just doesn't apply. So their reliance on the snippet of statutory language that basically says a completion of an action or dismissal thereof allows us to, you know, proceed and get a judgment and do foreclosure is inapplicable, because really what this section in my mind state stands for is that there shouldn't be a concurrent action, which is also codified in 6112.
Well, there wasn't a concurrent action here. There was an action that was dismissed.
Correct.
Strike that. It wasn't an action. There was a non-judicial foreclosure proceeding.
Correct.
And then there was an action on the note resulting in a judgment. Mm-hmm. And then there was a subsequent trustee sale by the prior Wells Fargo.
Correct.
Okay. So why does that in any way change the result here, that a judgment on the note does not extinguish the lien of the deed of trust?
Well, Your Honor, basically the argument that BECU is making there, and if we extend it to foreclosing junior lien holders, is that now they can go get a judgment and still foreclose, thus obviating the need for 6124-100, which is our anti-deficiency statute, because now a foreclosing junior lien holder could get a judgment first, but the deed of trust survives, and they can then go and do a foreclosure, and if there aren't sufficient funds from the foreclosure to satisfy the obligation, they can then revive their judgment and still pursue the debtor. Clearly, that was not the intention of the legislature, Your Honor, and I think that's the crux here, is that we have a mixing and matching of principles in counsel's brief or in BECU's argument of principles contained in 6112, which is our judicial foreclosure statute, and 6124, which is our non-judicial foreclosure statute. In the judicial foreclosure statute, any creditor, including a judgment lien holder, may obtain a judgment and then later on foreclose on real property. And if there's a deficiency, they may pursue that deficiency still. Nobody argues that. But this argument that BECU is making is extending that application of 6112 to 6124. And like I said, the Beal Bank case, the Washington State Supreme Court clearly said that 6124-100 does not apply to non-foreclosing lien holders. It's inapplicable. And as such, I believe it's this mixing and matching of principles between the two that really is confusing a lot of people, I guess. May BECU still sue on the note, even if they would have waited, for example? Sure, nobody's arguing that case. But I think what's important here is that they cannot sue, get a civil judgment, and then revive the deed of trust and get those benefits too. They cite the McCaffrey case in their briefing, which is a case that deals with 6112 quite clearly. It's a mix and matching of principles. It just doesn't apply. 6124-100 does not apply to non-foreclosing junior lien holder. The Supreme Court was very clear on that. Really, I think what the court needs to look to is what happened at the time of foreclosure. 6124-080 says, at the time of foreclosure, your lien will attach the surplus funds in the same priority as it was in existence at the time of foreclosure. In the instant case, BECU took the affirmative step of becoming a judgment lien holder. They even proceeded to garnish my client's wages twice, once before the foreclosure, once afterwards. And that's clearly a remedy that's not available to a deed of trust holder. So clearly they changed their lien. And at the time of the non-judicial foreclosure, there were a judgment lien holder. I don't think there's any argument that if you are a garden variety vanilla deed of trust holder that you would trump a homestead exemption. We're not arguing that in this case. If BCU would have waited just a few months, would have not sued, would have not pursued a civil judgment against the Burnses, we wouldn't be here today. There wouldn't be an argument to be made. They would have prevailed, no question about it. And I don't.
Part of your argument seems to be that the legislature couldn't have intended this because it's so wrong. I mean, it's unjust and unwise. Is that what you're saying? Are you saying that there's something, if this is the case, what BECU is arguing, that it's really bad, that it's a bad policy judgment in some way?
It would be, just as I outlined before, with respect to foreclosing foreclosing lien holders. Because now if a senior mortgage could foreclose after it obtains a civil judgment, it circumvents the purpose of 6124-100, our anti-deficiency statute, because now you can get a judgment, foreclose your deed of trust. If there's money left, if there's not enough money to cover your outstanding obligation, you still have your judgment. You can pursue the debtor.
What's so wrong with that? It seems to me that if you're a senior lien holder, then why shouldn't you get paid?
Well, then you should judicially foreclose. We have a remedy contained in our
statute. Maybe you don't want to. Maybe there's some reason why perhaps in your view of your relationship with your debtor, that you'd prefer to do it by a promissory note, perhaps. What's wrong with having them make that choice? I just don't see what's so bad. They're going to get the money one way or the other.
Well, it's a bite of the apple argument, Your Honor. You know, 6124.
You know, there's nothing inherently wrong with having two bites of an apple.
No,
I mean, you can eat the whole apple, as far as I'm concerned.
If
it's your apple.
I understand, Your Honor, but the issue is that the legislature, when it enacted 6124, specifically included this anti-deficiency language in there, because of, you know, the quicker, more cheaply, non-judicially overseen process. So that was one of the concessions banks had to make when they do a deed of trust foreclosure. Now, like I said before, there's nothing wrong with judicially foreclosing, but BCU didn't do that. If they would have done a judicial foreclosure, again, they would be well within the rights to obtain a deficiency. And then they could pursue my client post foreclosure if they would have foreclosed that way, but they didn't. They chose to obtain a civil judgment. And, you know, I'm sorry to say, but the legislature spoke. It is one of the big tenets of non-judicial foreclosures: you don't get a deficiency. And so I understand what Your Honor is saying, but that's the one bite at the apple rule, essentially, which was implemented in this.
A deficiency judgment, if you will, contemplates necessarily that there is a sale of the property to the one who seeks a deficiency, right? I mean, that's what it's about, deficiency.
Yes, in a judicial foreclosure context, that's correct, Your Honor.
And there never was a sale by BECU here, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So the underlying premise of your argument doesn't exist here. There was no sale by BECU, so the question of deficiency judgment is irrelevant.
Well, yes and no, Your Honor. I mean, if the court makes this ruling and holds for BECU and says, yes, you can obtain a civil judgment and later foreclose your deed of trust, who's to say that next time Wells Fargo's in first position doesn't apply this rule too? Goes gets a civil judgment and then later on forecloses. We just circumvented 6124-100. Clearly that was not the intent of the legislature. So In closing, the other final argument, this is kind of a moot point at this point in time, because in the interim, the Burnses have filed for bankruptcy. Any and all obligations they had vis-a-vis BECU have been discharged at this point in time. So really, there's nothing further that the court could grant that BECU didn't have before, and that could be implemented now that would grant BECU any relief. Thank you.
Notwithstanding the comment that was just made about the bankruptcy, you still maintain a right to the proceeds.
Your Honor, we do. This issue is not moot at all. There is nothing in the record in the way of legal argument or facts to suggest the mootness of these issues. It may be the case that because BECU still retains a property interest in that property that is now in the possession of the Burns, that an action for replevin or conversion or some other common law right may cause the return of these proceeds to BECU, notwithstanding the bankruptcy. My understanding of the bankruptcy code is that property in possession of the debtor but belonging to another does get returned to that other. It may require equitable tracing or a disgorgement remedy. There's nothing in the record to say that we can't pursue those funds, nor is this moot because it may affect our rights as a creditor in the Burns bankruptcy. Mr. Gossing correctly framed the issue. Can a creditor pursue judicial remedies, obtain those judicial remedies, and then pursue the non-judicial remedies associated with the beneficial interest in a deed of trust? The answer is yes. It's the plain language of 61.24, which says no action under subsection A of this rule, which refers to civil actions first, precludes the beneficiary from commencing a judicial foreclosure or trustee's sale under the deed of trust after completion or dismissal of that action. They say you can sue first, get a judgment, and then foreclose non-judicially. Mr. Gossing mentions the Beale case. But the Beale case doesn't say that 61.24.100 doesn't apply to junior creditors. It says their junior creditors' rights aren't implicated by 61.24.100 when a senior creditor forecloses. In that case, the holding was just that even though the junior lien holder didn't have their security anymore, they still had a good note. And Your Honor was absolutely correct when she said perhaps they don't want to foreclose. BECU is a community organization that keeps people in their homes. They want to get paid, but they don't want to kick people out of their homes.